We hope you enjoy the following presentation of Rudyard's Multi-Leveled Approach to Psychology, Part 2, by Dan Johnson. This was the first talk on Saturday afternoon, September 24, 1983, at the RITA Conference in Palo Alto, California. This recording is 30 minutes long. This audio is brought to you by RITA, the Rudyard Institute for Transpersonal Activity, a nonprofit public benefit corporation dedicated to disseminating the work and essential message of Dane Rudyard. All material is copyrighted by RITA. If you'd like to learn more about RITA or make a donation towards supporting the ongoing legacy of Dane Rudyard, visit www.rudyardinstitute.org. For the complete selection of free downloads of audio presentations by Dane Rudyard, visit www.rudyardaudioarchives.com. And now, Dan Johnson.
And links the social and individual levels. As mentioned, at the social level, humanity develops the ability to communicate through increasingly abstract symbols and language. The human intellect becomes able to separate and objectivize perceptions from the biopsychic world. Eventually, human beings begin to detect laws of nature and universal constants, which are presumably unaffected by the flow of time. The human intellect which discovers these laws is theoretically not affected by biological and social influences. As Rudyard has noted, this also leads to the notion that the knower is separate from what is known. This is a distinct characteristic of the emerging individual level of activity. The third function is the consecration of the individual to the whole. This links the individual with the transpersonal level. The person who has become a distinct individual experiences the need to join together with others in order to better fulfill his or her ambitions. While this may be done strictly for selfish purposes, the consecration to the whole also can provide the link whereby an individual selflessly devotes himself or herself to performing a function within the larger community. In the latter case, interpenetration takes the place of separation. The individual becomes attuned to larger wholes of existence, thereby raising his or her activity to a new transpersonal level. So, to summarize the levels of potential human development, Rudyard describes four such levels: the biological, the social, the individual, and the transpersonal. The biological is a stage of unconsciously performed organic functions. During the social stage, a person joins with others to form cultures which are dominated by specific customs and rituals. During the individual stage, one develops an independence from the previously confining cultural structures and ideally becomes an autonomous individual. At the transpersonal level, one functions not as a detached individual, but as an individual whose meaning and purpose are derived from the larger wholes in which he or she participates, and in relation to wholes, other individuals, on the same level. Certain functions aid in the transition from one level to another. Sex performs this function between the biological and the social levels, the discursive intellect between the social and individual levels, and consecration to the whole between the individual and transpersonal levels. This entire process involves a descent of spirit as well as an ascent of matter. As an individual's basic allegiance evolves from one level to another, he or she becomes attuned to increasingly greater wholes, and the spiritual purpose of the individual becomes more clearly defined and more encompassing. The evolutionary nature of the four levels of individual functioning parallels the cyclic evolution of humanity. What the human being experiences in his or her brief personal life mirrors what humanity as a whole has experienced and is continuing to experience. In order to better understand the character and development of the individual person, it is essential to understand the operation and evolution of larger wholes of which the individual is a part. For this purpose, Rudyard devotes the second half of Beyond Individualism to describing the evolution of a specific society or culture. Just as an individual performs a specific function within his or her culture, a culture performs a specific function within the larger whole of humanity. Rudyard divides the evolution of a specific culture into a thesis, antithesis, and synthesis. During the thesis, human beings function entirely on the biological level. They seek to adapt themselves as comfortably as possible to seasonal changes in environmental circumstances. Yet the seed of higher functions of development is latent in these people. Rudyard has distinguished between two theories regarding the origin and early development of human cultures. The popular Darwinian or materialistic theory views humanity as evolving from ape-like men in a barbaric state to a civilized, refined level of development. Rudyard contends that this theory should not be accepted without question. While most of us no longer think of human evolution as strictly a matter of straightforward, linear progress, it is still commonly believed that only primitive beings existed in archaic times. A cyclic view of human evolution introduces another possibility. A cyclic perspective implies that the end of a cycle is at least partially synchronous with the beginning of the next cycle. So, perhaps, a group of superhuman beings from a preceding cycle of evolution overshadowed and intervened in the early development of humanity. These beings would then have served as seeds for the current evolutionary cycle. According to this view, they brought to humanity the knowledge of agriculture and cattle raising, among other things, and the seed of self-consciousness and individuality. They would have appeared divine to human beings in the thesis phase because they belonged to a higher level of being. While this theory is regarded as fantastic by most academic people, the view has been promoted by many occultists, including Blavatsky and Rudolf Steiner. Also, the same basic principle was expressed in a different context in Arnold Toynbee's notion of the origin of cultures, in which he theorizes that the development of a culture whole ends with the transfer of power from the disintegrating society to a primitive yet intensely dynamic race or group of tribes. During the next phase of a culture's development, the antithesis, human beings become less bound by biological drives. They become more conscious and increasingly subject to social tradition. But above all, the antithesis phase is characterized by differentiation. In order to bring the various aspects of human activity to a clear, objective consciousness, and to facilitate the emergence of autonomous individuals, differentiation is required. But differentiation and development require the development of a sense of separateness, which leads to pride and the desire to dominate. For this reason, Rudyard terms the antithesis the age of differentiation and conflicts. During this age, culture wholes develop in four periods, which provide specific opportunities for growth, which generally correspond to the four stages of individual growth described earlier. Rudyard describes characteristic types of individuals for each of the four periods of the antithesis. These types are elaborated upon in the Essential Rudyard. In the Essential Rudyard, a positive, negative, and a transcendent aspect of each type is described for each period. A positive type is dominant and powerful, whereas the negative type is submissive and powerless. These types affect the social and cultural fabric and are still active as prototypes, conditioning personal and individual psychology. The first period involves conquest, physical activity, possession of land, and means of production. The positive types of this period are the warrior and the ruler. The warrior initially conquers and destroys the socio-cultural forms of societies. The dynamic, muscular, and willful power of the warrior enable him to protect and to maintain the community. The warrior is not able to organize the power which is gained, however. This is done by the ruler type. Whereas the warrior's power is largely biological and personal, the ruler is able to administer power in society. The appearance of the ruler indicates the collective need for centralizing power. Since the ruler also typically performs the function of defender of the culture's faith, the appearance of the ruler also is a response to the need to give religious sanction to absolute power. The negative type of the first period is the soldier, serf, or slave who obeys the will of the dominant ruler. The transcendent type is represented by the European Knight Crusader or by King Rama of India. This type, like the warrior, also is characterized by action and conquest. But unlike the warrior, the action and conquest are for a transcendent purpose. Krishna, who acts impersonally without regards for the fruits of his acts, epitomizes the highest symbol of emergence into selfhood through transcendent action. The second period is characterized by the preservation, consolidation, cultivation, and refinement of values acquired during the first period, and with the development of institutions which mold a specific way of behaving, feeling, and thinking. Social and political laws, religious dogmas, and philosophical and scientific laws are developed. The positive types of this period are the priest and the philosopher. Unlike the mystic, who typically transcends traditional and culture-bound forms, the priest maintains tradition and integrity of these forms by enforcing them, and also by preserving the collective order derived from a previous revelation. This gives the culture a sense of religious and social order. The philosopher represents a further stage of development during this period. The philosopher seeks to understand and to adequately formulate, in an objective manner, what is behind the revelation, or to formulate the order he or she intuitively perceives in the universe. The negative type of the second period is the religious devotee, who, due to personal insecurity, is driven to fit into existing religious and social forms. The transcendent type is represented by all individuals who emerge from the confining social and religious structures, thereby achieving a spiritual rebirth. St. Francis and Gautama the Buddha are transcendent types of this period. The third period is characterized by the growth of trade, the spread of interpersonal and intercultural relationships, and the expansion of production. Intellectual faculties must be developed to deal with the expansion during this period. Egos develop to deal with social situations and the tensions they cause. The social structures and forms built during the second period initially contain the selfishness and greed for power and wealth, and the desire for ever-increasing productivity. These structures eventually break down once the centralizing and integrating symbols and values lose their sacred nature and credibility. The positive types for this period are the producer and the trader. As a culture becomes more wealthy in relation to other cultures, productivity is enhanced. A new type of individual, the producer, emerges, who specializes in producing specific wares or services for profit. This gives rise to the bourgeoisie. The trader assumes an even more powerful role, though. The trader is eager to increase his wealth, social power, and prestige, while expanding, often unintentionally, the breadth and dynamism in a culture through interaction with other cultures. Even if only for the sake of profit, the trader absorbs qualities of other culture wholes. Cultural and religious exclusivism break down, as does the collective psychism. Every human being becomes aware of his or her individuality. The negative type of this period is the mass of workers and consumers who are mere wage earners, without any basis of individual power. The transcendent types are the adventurers and the visionaries of such fields as science and medicine, who dedicate their lives to expansion of communication and trade. Such individuals emerge from their societies to perform creative acts which serve as seeds for future humanity. As the forms through which sacred values were expressed become vulgarized, and as intellectual, emotional, sexual, and social restraints are no longer observed due to the pressure of social and economic changes, the fourth period begins. This period leads to a state of chaos but polarizes a few Promethean individuals who are dedicated to selflessly serving humanity. One of the positive types of this period is the person of service, the individual who is a manifestation of self-surrender, service, and sacrifice. Lenin and Gandhi are characteristic of this type. The negative type is the money-conditioned individual, who may gain considerable financial success and therefore security, but who becomes a slave to his or her wealth. The social power of money consumes this individual. The transcendent type of this period is the transpersonal individual, or the seed man or woman, who not only functions as an individual, but who also realizes his or her function in relation to larger wholes of existence. This individual bridges the end of one cycle and the beginning of another. He or she acts as a translucent lens through which the needs of humanity are addressed. Such an individual has a compassionate, holistic, global awareness, as well as a clear vision of the future evolutionary needs of humanity. During the age of differentiation, the types of human beings mentioned, and many other types, begin to differentiate themselves as autonomous individuals. After this antithesis phase in human evolution, a synthesis should occur, in which the conflicts of temperaments and interests of these different types of individuals should be pacified and transcended as humanity becomes aware of the interrelatedness and interdependence of all human forms. The way in which such a synthesis would occur is by no means clear. In order for humanity to take this next evolutionary step, it is necessary to first have an idea of what form it could take and to make a willful effort to bring about such a synthesis. Rudier has distinguished between materialistic and spirit-oriented utopias, which have been envisioned during the past century. One example of a materialistic utopia is that envisioned by Karl Marx, in which humanity becomes a classless society dominated by problems of productivity and material organization. In such a utopia, human development is seen to be occurring strictly in a physical universe, in which force acts against force, and strict laws prevail in a manner which is definable by the rational intellect. Another example of a materialistic utopia is the one imagined by the scientific mentality, in which the empiricism and intellectualism of Western society are glorified. In such a utopia, the biologists, psychologists, and medical experts, among others, would attempt to create an ideal type of human being and an environment benefiting the complete prosperity of this being. While materialistic utopias generally stress objectivity and the collective factor in human development, spirit-oriented utopias emphasize the individual and the subjective experiences which reveal the possibility of development beyond the physical realm. In spirit-oriented utopias, the human being is viewed as a spiritual being operating through a physical organism. Many such utopias have been imagined. One which has attracted considerable attention has been the one imagined by Sri Aurobindo. He imagined a supermental or agnostic race of beings. These individuals would be fused into oneness with the transcendent and universal spirit or self. To Aurobindo, human evolution is characterized by an ascent of matter and a descent of spirit, eventually leading to harmonious perfection. Such individuals would experience a oneness with others in such a manner that all beings would be as if they were their own selves. Such a race would not be molded according to a particular type, however. An infinite diversity would be present, but united through the Supreme Spirit. Aurobindo and Rudyard both acknowledge that such a utopia requires rigorous personal commitment on the part of all individuals and can only gradually be actualized. Rudyard contends that any such utopia also must recognize that each individual can play a potentially equally significant yet substantially different role in society. For this reason, in his conception of a plenary society, the spiritual equality of human beings would be the basic fact of social existence, and the society would be organized on the basis of functional differentiation. Individuals would not only perform different functions, but inevitably would function on different levels, as I described earlier. Rudyard has emphasized the need to recognize and allow for three basic types of human functions to be performed by people in such a society. The first, culture-oriented beings, who are deeply attached to the environment in which they were born, are largely producers who work most effectively within their limited environments, within their specific cultures. Civilization-oriented human beings, on the other hand, do not feel a particular attachment to their cultures and their immediate environments. They typically are managers and promoters. They become involved in large-scale organization and are the creators of new and more inclusive theories and systems. They rebel against all limitations. In order to assure the productive and cooperative functioning of the culture-oriented and civilization-oriented individuals, Another type of individual is required, the harmonizer. These people would be closely involved in any potential conflicts between the other two types and would essentially function at the fourth level, or the transpersonal stage. Whenever Rudyard speaks of the final stage of a cycle in which a relative fulfillment or actualization occurs, this does not imply a state of absolute completion. This merely refers to the completion of one evolutionary cycle. At the end of every cycle, there is both a degree of relative completion and a certain amount of unfinished business or unactualized potential. So, the synthesis stage of a culture's development does not represent an absolute ending point. It merely represents the completion of the current evolutionary cycle in relation to humanity's current level of consciousness, and more fundamentally, in relation to humanity's current needs. By using these models of psychological evolution, Rudyard provides us with a sense of where we came from, where we are, and where we are going. But as he has stated so many times, the importance is not merely to understand, but also to act. Subsequent evolutionary stages can only be attained through deliberate action taken with a clear understanding of our function and purpose within ever larger wholes of activity. A person who lives in such a manner is then able to appreciate the value and purpose of all existential activity. Opposites are seen as equally significant parts of an interconnected whole. Everything is not just recognized, but embraced. The cyclic, holistic flow of nature is not just seen, but felt to be working through all existential events. In this vein, I would like to conclude with a poem by Rabindranath Tagore, who many consider to be one of the principal figures of India in the 20th century. This poem is from Gitanjali, a book of poetry for which he won the Nobel Prize. And although it's translated from the Bengali, I feel that its essential message and imagery are still intact. The same stream of life that runs through my veins night and day runs through the world and dances in rhythmic measures. It is the same life that shoots in joy through the dust of the earth and numberless blades of grass and breaks into tumultuous waves of leaves and flowers. It is the same life that is rocked in the ocean cradle of birth and death, in ebb and flow. I feel my limbs are made glorious by the touch of this world of life, and the life throb of ages dances in my blood this moment. To feel that we are part of this cosmic process, and to realize our particular function within it, at increasingly encompassing levels of activity and consciousness, is the dharma of each individual. If you have any comments or questions, I'd be happy to try to answer them. Yeah. No. Does anyone else have anything they would like to bring up? It doesn't have to be a question. If you want to, you could just make a comment about something I commented on. Yeah?
I'm just looking it up just a second.
Yes, it's about the third and the fourth tier. There's something I don't understand very well, which is the difference between the producer and the money condition person.
Well, yeah, she was asking about the difference between the producer and the money condition person.
Mainly about the negative, the wage earner, and the, because I couldn't see them as clearly different, like you could extend that.
Yeah. Well, to my understanding, during the individual level of development, the producer performs an important evolutionary function in facilitating a particular type of activity and consciousness, that is, the growth of individuality. Whereas during the fourth stage, this has become, in a sense, perverted, so that the person is carried away with a sense of individuality and egocentrism. In the third stage, as I understand it, that trait, at least concretely, hasn't been manifested, at least in a deep sense. Anything else?
Another point that I haven't yet quite formulated for myself is about when you mentioned about the Marxist utopias as opposed to the spiritual one. There's, I often noted that there is a similarity between religious utopias and Marxist utopias. And I wondered how that fitting between the difference between spiritual and Marxist one and the similarity in fact between religious and Marxist.
Yeah, without knowing a great deal about Marxist utopias, as I understood Rudyard, what he was emphasizing is that in a spirit-oriented utopia, there is an emphasis on the individual as a being which is increasingly manifesting a spiritual form. This being is increasingly coming into contact with what he calls a spiritual quality. Its dharma is being realized. Mm-hmm. And that this isn't, to my knowledge, something that's contained within the materialistic utopias.
Doesn't he also draw the difference between the subjective realizations and spiritual utopias and the objective concerns?
Yeah, right.
The idea of Marxism itself being a religion, granted an atheistic religion, but having all the hallmarks of a religion itself.
Can't be just the reverse, that a man taking advantage of an idea to have power over the others more than the star of it.
I'm not following you.
I'm having problems with it. It's, well, there's the basis, or of a religion, or of, for example, Marxism. And power-centered people take advantage of that to use it as as a power over the, that's the way they relate.
Sure. Yeah. And then what the question before was involving with the producer type and the money condition type, the wage earner and all that, is that then what determines essentially the difference is the passivity and the functionality or dysfunctionality in this kind of situation of whether it's a materialistic, a materialistic utopia of some sort that is essentially has to be power mongering. It would have to be forcibly put into place, as it were. And then the passive type who would serve that would be overwhelmed by that. Mm-hmm. And the differentiation between that and the producer, the idea of a producer type is not dysfunctional. There's a time and a culture. When a culture is whole and healthy and is flowering, and those who produce within it, it's, you know, it's like bringing forth the fruit of that period of human development. It's not a dysfunctional thing at all. Whereas when you think of the idea of a factory worker doing something that is essentially to them meaningless, producing meaningless products that are dysfunctional within the society, in terms of the ecology of the planet, and yet are at the effect of this very giant, gigantic monetary system. That's the distinction of the negative of the type. And negative not meaning bad, but meaning passive at the effect of.
I don't think that you can necessarily equate religious utopia with spiritual utopia. I think that those are not just two words meaning the same thing. but rather perhaps a spiritual utopia is that which is moving on, moving, it is progressive and moving toward a future, and a religious utopia is not necessarily of that nature. It can be very materialistic in nature.
More institutionalized. Yeah, I think that's a good point. Okay, well, thank you.
This is the end of part two of Rudyard's Multi-Leveled Approach to Psychology by Dan Johnson from the 1983 RITA conference. The preceding audio is copyrighted by and was brought to you by RITA, the Rudyard Institute for Transpersonal Activity. Learn more about RITA or contribute to the ongoing legacy of Dane Rudyard at www.rudyardinstitute.org. For the complete selection of free downloads of audio presentations by Dane Rudyard, visit www.rudyardaudioarchives.com.